This is Take Charge Your Health with Corinne Frenari, clinical nutritionist, physician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye!
Welcome back, welcome back. Here we are. I'm with Carol. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about a silent killer that...
Or not.
Or not. Or it doesn't have to be. And a disease and malady that at one time we thought was somewhat inevitable and kind of random, but then we found risk factors. And then once it existed, there were limited options for curing it or working with it. And that is osteoporosis. And not many people think of osteoporosis as a killer. But what happens is once an older person breaks their leg or their hip or their femur, or a part of their pelvic structure, what happens? Very often, they release clots from the center of the broken bone, and those clots go into the lungs, and you're dealing with months in rehab while the patient is learning to work again, and very often, we're dealing with pneumonia, and then the end result is that there is a regularity that they die within the year. So they have reduced their life expectancy by 50% by having that break. We're talking about 53 million Americans. That's women, but also men who can suffer and do suffer from this. But it's interesting because we say suffer or experience this. You really don't have symptoms until there is a problem. So you're not really suffering. You're walking along or going along, losing a little bit of balance, but and not feeling your strongest. But the end result can be a surprise broken bone happening while you're just walking, not even doing anything strenuous or having any difficulty. And then here you go into this cascade of problems. So, Carol, what do you think about all this?
What? where should we start?
I know.
I started doing a dive into how we were testing for osteoporosis.
Okay.
And I think people are pretty familiar with going in and having an X-ray.
It's
called a DEXA scan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it's a very mild X-ray. It's about the same amount of X-ray that's released in a flight across country that you're receiving. It's a very low amount. Go on.
Well, that didn't make me feel any better.
I know, because you fly a lot.
Yeah. But having said that, so you get the scan, and what you're actually compared to, and this is, these are definitions that were set by the World Health Organization. And the standard is a healthy 30-year-old woman, and what her bone density at that time was. And it's a Caucasian woman. So this is a real problem when you're comparing one ethnic group and using that as a standard. For instance, Asian people tend to have smaller bones, less dense bones, but they're still being compared to this Caucasian girl. And what we don't know is for each and every person, we talked about this briefly, ideally, if you wanted to use this as a measure, you would look at what your bone density was over time. Ideally, we would have a scan of your bones when you were 30, when your bone density was at its peak. However, we don't have that, so we're getting compared to this girl. And then those are the T scores, how much you deviate from this girl.
From this 30-year-old Caucasian woman.
Right. Another problem with this particular kind of measurement is that it's normal and natural and well documented that as we age, our bone density goes down. Remember, I just said you're at peak bone density when you're in like your 30s. So it's not accounting for that particular thing, but they do report Z scores now, which are interesting. Z scores compare you to
age group.
Your age group and to your ethnic group. And so all of a sudden, if you were just relying on T scores, you get a lot of people being diagnosed with osteopenia, which is considered less bad than osteoporosis. And then osteoporosis, all of a sudden, when you switch from looking at a T score and look at a Z score, all these people are suddenly not at risk that were said to be at risk. So that's a real important thing to be looking at. People should be looking at Z-scores, and they're a little more fundamentally precise than the T-score. Remember, we're being compared to a young woman at 30 years old, Caucasian. So then this is also ignoring, as I said, it's ignoring the natural progression of bone loss as we age. But there's another thing that is a real problem here. We're equating bone density with bone strength. And I was just reading a really nice metaphor. Was about, if you have a piece of glass, that glass is very dense, but it has no strength. It's easy to break and shatter.
It's brittle.
Brittle. So compare that with a piece of wood, which has less density, if you were to measure density, but it's a flexible, it's bendable, it's malleable. So it really will tend less to break than your piece of glass if it runs into an opposition like we're talking about a fall. So that's another big problem. This is not necessarily a good way to diagnose a problem with your bones. So we have issues with how we do this. Everybody,
how we do their testing and our reference range.
Right. Now, you were telling me about a patient that you looked at just recently. I think you should share that with everybody. That's so interesting.
Yeah, I want to share this, and then I want to literally define the topic. Mm-hmm. What is osteoporosis? Because so many of us, I mean, if you pick up a rock, you look at it and you say, oh, this is just like bone. Well, it isn't, because bone is constantly what they call remodeling. 10% of bone at every time, all throughout the day and night, is remodeling. It's breaking down, it's building up, it's breaking down. There's a soft, spongy part of the bone in the middle, and that is remodeled or turned over completely in 3 to 4 years. Then you have the outer crust, the denser part of the bone, that is turned over in 10 years. So what you're dealing with is this natural progression of tearing down, building up, tearing down, building up. You can't just build. You have to tear up, tear down, clean to replace with strong, healthy bones. When you see a weakened beam in your house, you don't just take it away. The whole house will fall over. What you do is you place a strong and then you pull it out. So now you have replaced it. It's called remodeled. And it's a very important part of what we're dealing with. And the remodeling has multiple components. And we're going to go over those one by one, because one, there's a genetic factor in it. There's a weakness. It's not totally 100% dominant. That when you have a genetic component to weaker bones, you just have to work a little harder. There is a dietary component. When you have a dietary relationship or weakness to that's creating weaker bones, you just change the way you eat and you work with your digestion, you work with your microflora, you increase your minerals within your food intake. And then there's a hormonal component. So we know that certain hormones, estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, all build bone. They work together in symphony building bone. And then there is a life factor and ways that we live our life by getting sleep. We know that our bone is building frenetically in the middle of the night while you sleep deep, and your hormones are now surging and being built up to make it through the day. We know that. So sleep, we know exercise, and we're going to talk about all these different fields and how they affect the bone. But the reason why this topic came up and was I had a patient, and she was 78 years old. She came into my office and she told me, excuse me, that her doctor yells at her every time she sees her and demands that she take a bisphosphonate or Fosamax, one of those drugs that act on the bone to stop the teardown of the bone. It doesn't stimulate the buildup. It's attempting to stop the teardown. And there's a process in there. I'm going to ask Carol what that means. So I think we explained it, but we're going to go a little deeper into that, stopping the teardown, what happens to the bone when that happens. So what, and I said, well, let me see your testing. Fortunately, she didn't have one test. She had three tests. And those three tests were over 10 years. And the first one was in her early 60s. The second one was in her 70s. And the third one was when she was 70s, and then when she was 77, it happened last year. So I said, let me look at them. And I look at them, and one has a very low level in one area of the body of osteoporosis, and the other two showed osteopenia. Okay, now this is
that was with the T-scores.
That's with the T-scores.
Okay.
So what we're dealing with is the fact we're dealing with a 78-year-old being told to take bisphosphonates. Well, what happens with that is that we have to understand that our bones peak in density around 29, 30, 35 maximum they peak. And then they start slowly, but very slowly breaking down until right before menopause. Last 2 years before we go into menopause, you have a rise in what they call your FSH. And that's also how we measure that someone's going into menopause, is we look at their pituitary hormone, the FSH. If it's surging, that's our brain saying, hey, give us more hormone. And if it's surging, we know that the patient is going or deeply entrenched into menopause. At that point, we start losing about 4% a year. And that's for the year before we go into menopause, maybe the 2 years, and then for 2 years after menopause. And then that pituitary hormone says, well, I'm not getting any more, and it comes back down. And now you have a stabilization of bone loss that can be 1% or less than 1% a year. That's after menopause. So this woman was 78. She is in a significant postmenopausal stage. Mm-hmm. We know that her bone density is quite stabilized now. She's had no problems, but that's not surprising. And she's doing work to maintain bone strength. She's on a little vibrating machine that stimulates the building of bones. She's on natural hormone therapies. So what they're attempting to do is intercede in a process very aggressively that really doesn't need that. That if this woman was trained in her diet, her nutrients were balanced, her supplements were balanced, and a little bit of a lifestyle program was created for her. I've had patients in their late 60s increase 9% bone density. Can you believe that? When you take these drugs, what do you increase? If you're really lucky, you get 2 or 3%. I've had with life change and nutrients and exercise and emphasizing sleep and lots of water, I've had people increase up to 9% without any drugs. Now, that can be...
Hello.
That can be you too. That can be you too, because what we're dealing with is a prior epidemic, an epidemic that priorly was thought to be irreversible, but it isn't anymore. It now becomes, with our understanding, an optional epidemic. So, Carol, you want to start talking about...
I want to talk about the drugs a little bit more.
Oh, please do.
So we have this class of drugs, bisphosphonates, and what they do is paralyze a cell in the bone. We'll talk more about that later. Osteoblasts, those are the cells that are responsible for new bone growth. The osteoclast cells are the cells that are responsible for breaking down old bone and helping your body metabolize and get rid of that debris. So the osteoclasts get paralyzed by this drug. And the result is when you do this DEXA scan test, you will indeed show increased bone density. You'll get a nice test. But your net result on the quality of your bone is actually really poor. Remember the metaphor with the glass. Instead of being more wood-like, your bones become more glass-like. And these drugs have not really shown to be a benefit in preventing breaks, because we still fall. We still have issues with damaging our bodies inadvertently. But when we have been pre-treated with these drugs, now we splinter like a piece of glass instead of be flexible like a piece of wood. And that is a great danger. And we have some really big problems, for instance, in the field of dentistry, because people may need to get a tooth pulled, and the dentist pulls the tooth, and you're unable to restore that bone in your jaw and fill in the hole left by your tooth, because you simply cannot remodel healthy bone anymore. And because we've had this really big push in dentistry where people want to put implants where they've had a pulled tooth, those are really a problem too. I know some dentists will not treat somebody on these drugs and put an implant in because they fail. The bone in the jaw cannot support an implant. So it's a real huge problem. Just let me talk about dentistry one more thing. We have this saying about getting long in the tooth, where your gums pull away from your teeth. That is a physical sign that you are losing bone density. So your dentist, on top of taking x-rays and looking at your teeth and your jaws, can give you a pretty good idea about the state of your bones.
And what happens is, it is a phenomenon, it's well known to dentists who deal with bone constantly. It's called osteonecrosis, and you might have heard of it. And it's literally when you walk in and fill in an intake form, one of the first things they ask is if you're on, what drugs you're on, if you're on proton pump inhibitors, if you're blocking stomach acid, If you're blocking stomach acid, mm-hmm. you're not able to take in minerals and you're not able to build new bone. If you're on the bisphosphonates, what you are is a setup for what we said, osteonecrosis, and what is happening there. You cannot build bone. It's just because all the old damaged bone hasn't cleaned out. There's no room for new bone to fit into the holes and support the growth. And we see that all the time. We see it. I see it in my office, and dentists are very well aware of the problem. But let's talk a little bit about the causes of this. And the causes are very important because they're very directly and can be very directly related to us. Number one, well, you have the determinant of genetic causes that you're really not in charge of, but you can work around them, and that is small frame, that is hip parents, history of osteoporosis or weak bones. That is age. As we age, there is something that the functional doctors are calling age-mlation, or I'm pronouncing it incorrectly. What it is age inflammation. And as we age, our inflammation goes up. And the higher the inflammation, the less we are able to have most of our natural functions, but also the remodeling of our bone becomes weaker and weaker. So as we age, which we really can't change it, I can't go back to 20 years from now, 20 years ago. So what do we do? Okay, then there's other causes, smoking. You know, 50% of our protein in our bone is a collagen protein matrix. Well, what does smoking do? You see smokers, they have all these fine lines on their face, just all wrinkled up, even when they're younger. And what they've done, what the smokers have done, is they've blocked the uptake of collagen into their tissue. They've killed the elastin enzyme that allows the skin to stretch. Well, they're doing it in the skin. But guess where else it's happening? It's happening in the bone, because our bone is the largest repository of collagen. And blocking the ability to uptake that makes it impossible to have good, strong bones. So smoking. You know what else I was a little surprised? 2 drinks a day. Will slow down the remodeling. A regular 2 drinks a day will slow down the remodeling of the bone. That I was surprised. I didn't really know that at all. Another thing, we're talking about drugs. Well, proton pump inhibitors, anything that blocks your stomach acid, you need your stomach acid. And if you're getting reflux, it's not most of the time, almost 99.759% of the time.
Are you making that up?
I just made it up. It's not because you have too much stomach acid. It's because your digestion is off. And so we have to work with our digestion. We have to allow food to move through our stomach. And we do that in 2 ways. One, we do that through diet, through reducing all the dead carbs that we're eating that fills our stomach, and by us and eating correct foods and using enzymes and herbals as enzymes. Herbals can be wonderful enzymes, and working with our intestinal microbiome. They help the food go through. But then there are other risk factors that we can do. Oh, the other one?
Let me do a couple of the drugs.
Steroids.
Steroids, such as prednisone, synthetic, triamcinolone, betamethasone. Many people are on these for long periods of time. They have autoimmune diseases, they have arthritis or something, and their doctor keeps them on that, and all during that time, their bones are getting weakened.
They're dissolving.
They're virtually dissolving. Statin drugs, the drugs for cholesterol.
Oh, yes.
So why I need to mention that is because using a statin drug for cholesterol inhibits your ability to make hormones. We talked about the osteoclast slows down bone loss. That's where estrogen has an effect. Osteoblasts making new bone, that's where progesterone and testosterone and DHEA all have a function. So if you are taking a statin drug and deliberately knocking down your cholesterol, and why did it go high in the first place? Your body might have made it go high because it needs these very hormones and it's putting extra effort into making it. Yet our conventional medicine doesn't really look at why might cholesterol be high. The solution for conventional medicine is high is not good. We've got to put a damper on it immediately. There was a Danish researcher and clinician who wrote some books, and this is already 30-some years ago, and he found that he had patients with severe cardiac issues, even diabetic gangrene. They were extremely low in testosterone. So he supplemented testosterone. What he also noted about these patients was that initially their cholesterol levels were high. Once they were treated with testosterone and some of these issues being resolved, cholesterol came back down. So is that high cholesterol level just a function of low sex and adrenal hormones? It certainly could be. So that's a biggie. Using those kind of drugs and using it for a long period of time are not bone enhancing, and it really causes havoc with all your hormones. I'd like to stick in another one, lithium. We've talked about lithium a few times on this program. People with bipolar disease are given lithium in large doses and 3-4 times a day in some big doses, like 250 milligrams. When we've talked about lithium, we've talked about 10 to 30 milligrams too, for brain stimulation. But these large doses of lithium, again, people are on this for long, long periods of time. And that works havoc with your bones and is a known cause of osteoporosis. So there's so many drug classes that can be a problem with your bones. But when you're looking at that, even though we say it's kind of silent, it's not only your bones that are going to show that. You're going to have less than optimal functioning of your whole body. You will be losing muscle mass, and you'll be losing your vitality because of some of these things. So it's not altogether a surprise. There's outer signs that things are not optimal. But these are classes of drugs that can create some real problems.
Carol, do you remember, I was trained this way, that when people had severe osteoporosis, we would give fluoride.
Oh, yeah.
We would give doses of fluoride that they were to take to strengthen the bone. And what were we doing there? We were doing a similar thing, but from a different pathway. We were strengthening the bone, but the end result was that the bone became so brittle that when you put the pressure on it, it wouldn't break. It would shatter like old china.
Right. And I have a nightmare picture in my mind because I used to be functioning as a regular pharmacist in a regular pharmacy, and I recall this older lady coming in all the time for that prescription of fluoride. And as I think back, I go, I certainly was not doing any good in contributing actually to more problems for her, which, you know, can give you nightmares. But one of the things that we've had because of this big push for fluoride, which substitutes for calcium in the bones, you can actually see this on the teeth. You get white, opaque areas on your teeth, and that's called fluoridosis. And it's become a cosmetic problem. So we see young people, particularly because we've been giving them fluoride toothpaste, and the doctors have been promoting putting fluoride on their teeth when they're in for an appointment. So chloridosis is something that's visible, and that's occurring in your bones all over. That's not just in your teeth, the white opaque areas. And those areas are, just as Corinne said, they're more brittle and can shatter easily.
I want to bring up something kind of funny, because we all heard those commercials, Got Milk, and then it went on to strong bones, strong teeth, more vitality. And why aren't they still on, those commercials still on? It was put on by the American Dairy Association, and they're not put on because they were pulled off, because the FCC said there is no proof showing that milk helps build strong bones, and this was falsifying and false advertising. So they were pulled off with no fanfare, no explanation. Just one day they weren't there anymore. And Dr. Mark Hyman talks about that, and he wrote an article about that. And what he titled the article was "No Proof."
Well, so, there isn't. And how do the cows get strong bones? It wasn't from drinking milk.
No, definitely.
They were doing their normal grazing.
There's something else that really doesn't take much and get much notice, and I want to bring it up too. In terms of foods, we're looking at celiac. People with diagnosed celiac disease, inability to digest the gluten, and much of the dairy, if not all dairy, have very light bones, very small bones, very, very high risk of fracture. Now, we have the celiac, which is a genetic, but we also have not exactly a genetic, but an inability to digest wheat as mm-hmm. it exists today, the hybrid. It's not a GMO. It's a hybrid that it exists today. So we're not dealing with the smaller amount of the population of the celiac. We're dealing with a very large portion of the population who, when eating wheat and some dairy, are unable to digest and unable to absorb minerals. So that's a really important piece of it. But you know what? I want to talk about the fact of, I went through, in preparing for this, I went and listened to multiple doctors and read multiple doctors, holistic doctors, on the treatment and care of osteoporotic patients. And most of them, and not 100%, most of them suggest taking no extra calcium. Mm-hmm. They say that what they want is, they want people to get calcium from their foods. And how do we do that? Well, you mentioned a very good statement. You said, well, where do cows get their calcium? They get their calcium from grass. And we get much of our calcium, and most of the world gets much of their calcium, from greens, from green, fresh, leafy green, and green vegetables, which are very important. And also, let's go down a little bit of a list, and you can add to sardines. Sardines are, and I ask just about everyone that comes into my office, do you like sardines? And 1 out of 10 say, well, I'll try it. The others say, out and out, no way. But sardines are incredible.
Someone put it on there.
So I didn't hear you. I'm sorry.
Oh, chopped onions on top of the sardines.
Oh, yeah. And
lovely.
And you get the ones with the bones, and they're teeny tiny. So they're very small, and they're packaged in olive oil. They're a very high source of calcium. Mackerel is a very high source of calcium. Chia seeds, when you get a serving of chia seeds, they have more calcium than a cup of milk. And tahini is one of the highest sources of calcium. And I use tahini as salad dressing, but it's very, very thick and dense, so I don't use it straight. I get an organic olive oil, and mix it with the tahini. Sometimes I put a little bit of garlic, like a half a clove, and squeeze it in. Sometimes I put a little vinegar, which helps digestion, and I mix it together. Sometimes I put a yogurt in there and mix it all together and pour it over the vegetables. What have I done? I've just dosed that up with a tremendous amount of minerals, but specifically digestible calcium. And, you know, when you look at other countries, and African countries, they don't take in much calcium. But it's not how much you take in, it's how much you digest and absorb. And you see very, very little osteoporosis and that kyphosis, that bending of the back that you see so dramatic, which is so dramatic and looks so painful as people are walking along. You see very little of that in Africa and South America. And yet their calcium intakes are very low. And yet, you know what? If I went up to 10 women, just told strangers, tell me about strong bones, the first thing they'll say is calcium. Isn't that interesting?
Even use Tums, calcium carbonate.
Yeah, that's what we were told years ago. Well, if you take a Tums.
WHO recommends 1,200 milligrams of calcium.
Well, guess what? The only holistic doctors that recommended calcium, their range was in 500 to 600. They say beyond that can be toxic. It can be toxic to the heart, toxic to the arteries. You know, calcium is nature's Band-Aid. Why do we make a scab? Calcium moves in and helps the platelets move in there to create a growth, which then becomes a scab, which then heals. And if it's correct, it heals with no scarring. Well, the same process is taking place internally. So when you have inflammation and you have all this excess calcium circulating, what is it doing? It's band-aiding all of these different lesions. Some of them are in your arteries. So what we're looking at is this cholesterol that began and then stuck to the wall of the arteries and that got covered with calcium, which becomes a hard block-like substance. When I was training, I remember we had arteries and dried, and there were some new arteries, there were some middle age and some old arteries, and you would feel it. It would feel like a 60 grit sandpaper. And what was that? That's extra calcium. What prevents that also? There's a couple of things that prevent it. One that prevents it is not taking in too much calcium.
It's vitamin K2.
Yes. Can you explain that to us, Carol?
So vitamin K is a little complicated. There's more than one form of it, K1 and K2, and multiple forms of K2 even. And one of the things that we carry along with us is that the blood thinner Coumadin interferes with vitamin K, but it's actually K1. And so we need to make a distinction here between K1 and K2. We're talking about supplementing with K2. Not K1, so it's not a coagulation thing that's tied up with Coumadin. So K2 is actually the vitamin that helps shuttle calcium into your bones. Now, what's happening to you if you don't have adequate K2? Just as Corinne described with it going into your arteries, calcium is deposited into your body in places it does not belong, and hence we get things like spurs on our bones. People have growths on their bones that they actually have to have surgery to remove if it's causing them pain. Or another really common place is in your breasts. How many people have you heard they go in for mammograms, and then they go in for biopsies, and they're told they have a calcification in their breasts that could have been avoided with using less calcium or making sure there's adequate K2. One of the really rich sources is grass-fed meat, grass-fed butter, particularly the fat, has K2. And this was first identified many years ago, and nobody knew what it was. They called it Compound X, the mysterious thing in grass-fed meats and fats. And they finally identified it as vitamin K2. So it's absolutely essential. There's enough K2 in your either in your diet or supplementing that you use this, and calcium does not get redistributed into your tissues. Joints are another big place where you get this maldistribution of calcium, that it does go into the bones where it should have been going all along.
Now, remember when we used to talk, and we still need to talk about, but right now that's not the total subject, about lead? Lead is it's very important iron, heavy metal, and it's quite toxic. It's very toxic. Used to, and it was ubiquitous. It was in the air we breathed. Particularly, I was brought up in L.A., and I lived in the mountains, in the hills outside of L.A., and sometimes you couldn't even see the wall right behind our house because there was so much smog, and most of that was lead. Lead has an affinity. The body takes lead in 300 times more available than calcium. So when you're high in lead, your body is grabbing up the lead rather than pulling in the calcium. And where is it going? It's going into the veins, arteries, brain, and bones. So it's kind of interesting, and this is very important to do, as you're going into menopause and postmenopausally, check your bones for heavy metals. Check your body for heavy metals. Not just your bones, your body for heavy metals.
Because we're not doing bone biopsies.
No, we're not going to do a bone biopsy. Not in my office anyway. And what ends up happening is that you'll see that's one of the markers for the fact that you're losing lots of bone. And what you'll see is people who have had, who have been stable, lose very high in toxic metals. And that's because they were stored in the bone and the bone is being broken down. So you can work with that phenomena. You can begin an oral and IV, but also oral detox, and with foods, with cilantro, with spirulina, with chlorella, also with lipoic acid and selenium. You could start drawing out, or you could do EDTA suppositories, which are available, and start drawing out. You don't want to do those every day, maybe twice a week, on days that you're not taking in minerals, because EDTA draws out. It draws everything out, good, bad, and indifferent. It draws it out. So you maybe would take EDTA 2 days a week, maybe on the weekends, and continue. So you're supporting this body process. And while you're taking in adequate good minerals, and you're drawing all these toxins out of your bones. Remember, your bones remodel every 10 years. Every 10 years. So, you know, Carol, there was this one book that I read. I sent it to my mother, 99 years old. And it's called Strong Women Stay Young. And it's a doctor out of Tufts, a physiatrist, who started exercising her patients. She was a heavy exerciser with weights. She started exercising her patients, her older women patients, started at the age of 60 and started them on light weights. And their weights got heavier and heavier. And then finally, older women saw the program, saw the progress. She had 92-year-old women saying, I want to be on this program. And she was documenting their age markers. And they were literally getting younger as they got stronger. But now, with what I know now, this book was written about 15 years ago. What I know now is I would add perfect aminos. And you put perfect aminos with that protocol, and you'll get such amazing bone growth. And what does bone growth do? It stimulates bone. When you have stress like that, what happens? Your body responds, and it responds specifically by building bones. And we have a really good example of that was the astronauts. Mm-hmm. Men and women went up into space, and after a few months came down, at just a couple months, they lost over 11% of their bone mass. And the reason being, there was no stress on their bones. And these were people in tip-top shape, eating really good diets, and they were losing bone as fast as they could. So adding that exercise, adding a slight shake machine. I like
yeah,
those.
That's how the vibration machines got started.
Yeah.
For the development for the astronauts. So there are all kinds of
to support their bone.
Even heard that there are clubs right now where you can go in and regularly have a short treatment with a vibration plate. If you don't want to buy your own, in some areas they have like a gym, but they only vibrate you.
and the motion is so mild that mm-hmm. you could put a full cup of coffee on the machine, turn it up to high, and it doesn't spill mm-hmm. because it's vibration. You don't want a machine that goes jung, 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 and just shaking you all over, because you could tear some of the ligament connections to the bone. What you really want is to vibrate, and a few things happen. One, puts stress on the bone. Two, it constantly keeps you moving to maintain balance, which helps your proprioception. And it has been shown to amazingly increase one, bone density, but also balance. And women are able to maintain their balance on a much better and more effective level. And so that could be a very powerful change you could bring into your life. There is one piece of that. Now, the machine, when I heard about the machine, I called the company immediately. I wanted it in my office, in my house. I wanted everybody that walked into my office to stand on this while they were waiting for me to call in. And I'll talk about healthier. Whoa, that would be wonderful. Come to find out, the machine was $12,000. And so I never really was able to go forward with that program. I thought I would, but unfortunately, no. But
yeah, they've become less expensive.
Much now. Less, significantly. And you don't want a heavy shake. You want a vibration that can turn up to a heavier shake, but you want more. You want it to be able to go down into a vibration. But you know what else I found? I found that these little small trampolines, that their legs fold up, you slip them under the bed, you pull it out. Now, you could do lots of things on those trampolines. You can walk on them. You could dance on them. You could jump on them. Or you could just stand on them. Just standing on them will help you build your balance, and it'll help you build your bone. And remember, the strength will help build bone, especially in the stress points of your body where you have a higher tendency to have problems. You know, there's also something that we forget. Some of the diabetic meds, the Avandia, can interfere with bone remodeling. And
in general, diabetics have low in testosterone.
Yes.
Hugely low in testosterone. And whether it's coming from a drug or the swings in your blood sugar or coming from cortisol being generated, I'm not quite sure. But it's like always low. And therefore, your ability to make new bone is compromised when that's going on.
You know what else I found? I found a study of 54,000 participants. And this was done from 93 to 2001. And what it is a study where they just start taking statistics on people for like 8 years and just taking statistics. And then once it's all compiled from 54,000 people, then they start analyzing what they really got and started looking at it. So they started to look at terms of foods, no supplement at all in this look, and just foods and bone strength. And they broke it up into four groups. They broke it up into meat eaters. Now, at that time in 91, what were meat eaters? Meat eaters were smokers. They didn't care what they ate. They ate meat, hamburgers, whatever. They didn't care. It wasn't like the kind of consciousness that we have at these days. Then they looked in, and then the next classification was pescatarians. That's generally a vegetarian who eats fish and cheese and eggs. So you had the fish, cheese, and eggs. And then they looked at vegetarians, and they would eat occasionally egg and dairy. And then you had the vegans, no animal products at all. And what did they find? They found that the lower breaks happened in the meat eaters. And they literally broke it down into areas of breaks, but the overall, the lowest number of bone breaks was in the meat eaters. The pescatarians were second, a close second. The vegetarians were not as good, and the vegans had the most breaks and bone breaks of any group studied. And what are we looking at? We're looking at protein. We're looking at protein and absorption of protein. Mm-hmm. We're looking at collagen. Where does collagen come from? Most collagen is a meat source. That's why we always talk about, Carol and I continuously speak about bone broths.
Right, right. And excellent source.
Excellent. The water becomes like a jello with the joint cartilage just melted into the water. And what do you have? You have this wonderful absorbable collagen that has been pre-digested by the heat and the cooking. And so you drink it down, and one, you're healing your stomach, and number two is you're supporting your bones and your joints. Now, what would I do if someone with osteoporosis walked in my office? First thing I would do is work on bringing down their inflammation. Number one, as a matter of fact, anybody that walks in my office, the first thing I do is bring down their inflammation, because osteoporosis is an inflammation disease. And when you bring down the inflammation, everything in the body works better to heal. Everything. And we know that as we age, and that's just a natural process, we have a higher tendency to inflammation. And we also have a higher tendency to reduce our ability to digest meat. So using enzymes, using probiotics, using natural anti-inflammatories, which can be this new form of boswellia that's activated.
Yeah, just thinking about boswellia.
Yeah, it's just, yep. And curcumin and ginger, drinking ginger tea. All of these just add up to a healthier body. Do I want you to take, I'm going to say one other thing, strontium. Strontium is an important piece to add to the protocol. And you don't need lots and lots and lots of it. You need 1/100th of the amount of calcium you're taking to get strontium to move into the bone and build strong, healthy bone. Not a fluoride bone, but a strong, healthy bone. And we've known that for hundreds of years. When the gladiators would get hurt, they had their own doctors. And what would their doctors do? They would take ash from fires and mix it with water and have the gladiators drink it. And what was it high in? Strontium. And they knew that it would speed bone healing. You know what, Carol? It's such a simple subject, osteoporosis. It's all been an hour already. And we got more to talk about. I wish people could call in and ask us questions because we could really assist them in this field. It would really be fun. So maybe we can figure that out. But it's always fun, Carol.
Yes, it is.
I always learn when I talk with you and when we're together.
Yes, me too. And I hope our audience picked up some pearls and That's what we hope and wish for.
Even if they were half listening, they had to pick up something because we were throwing out information fast and furiously. So thank you so much for being with us this hour. It really was fun. We enjoyed ourselves. We do this as a labor of love to share health and to share well-being with our listeners, with their families, with the community. So thank you again, and we'll be back next week. Bye, Carol. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com. And my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me. Left Hook from Redding, California. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.